Hello and welcome to I'm Alice podcast, and we're talking about connection, creativity, and how we find clarity through our ever-changing world that we live in. So we're talking about transformation and change. So welcome to this edition of I Am Alice podcast. I hope you enjoy it. Okay, so welcome to another edition of I'm Alice podcast. And today I'm talking to Julia Cartwright, and we're talking about a book that she's working on currently, and it's going to be supporting people going through change. I mean, as we all know, we're going through a lot of change at the moment. So Julia's going to talk about tools and what she feels is really important for us going through change, or anyone going through change at any point. So I'll pass you over to Julia and she can introduce herself and her background, and then we'll go into the tools that Julia wants to share with everyone.
Okay. Thanks, Alice. Thank you. My name is Julia Cartwright. I have a very varied background in terms of my career. I had a first career as a chartered surveyor working in property. I then transitioned, because of my property background, into working in health. I re-qualified as a psychologist and neuropsychologist, worked in the fields of evidence-based medicine. And I guess in terms of weaving all of those threads together, I myself have been through a lot of change. From my very early years living in a very remote rural community, to then moving to a town, going to then a big university city, going to London, being one of the few women in commercial property, transitioning then into retraining in my late 30s with a family, running my own companies as a coach. So in all of those things, change has been a thread. And I'm a very observational person, and I've been observing for many years where we're going as a collective, and the change and the acceleration of change is huge at the moment. So I continue to do my coaching work one-on-one, but it has developed into what I call a spiritual dimension in terms of change, the inner change, because it's the change within ourselves that actually will keep us balanced during the external changes in the world. So because I am a writer, I had a book published back in my Oxford days, an academic book. And so writing comes very easily to me. And I have felt that in terms of this observational time, people really need tools to literally ride the waves that are coming time and time again, day after day. And the thing is, it isn't just one change. It's environmental. It's social, it's economic, it's everything. So people very often feel overwhelmed. So we have to go back to, okay, so what are, I call them the virtues, the 10 virtues that are valuable in volatile times. So we live in volatile times. We live in a time of VUCA, volatility, uncertainty, chaos, and adapting. We've got to adapt to ourselves to these changes. We don't really have an option. And so in terms of actually drafting out this book, I've taken 10 what I see as virtues. You could say they're virtues from a world that's past, you know, because we don't necessarily consider them anymore, because we've become a very materialistic, greedy, self-obsessed generation or generations. So to go back to those virtues, which I have to thank my female ancestors for, who raised me, you know, with in those times that virtues were considered more important than actually what you had. It's like, what kind of person were you? How did you live your life? So I've kind of sort of reflected myself on what I think are the 10 most important virtues in these volatile times, which are valuable. And because I'm quite a practical person, actually the tools and techniques are very practical. So I started off with patience, because I think that's actually a very useful human virtue. I'm learning it quite a lot here in Portugal, where things are very, very slow. Things are very slow to happen. So learning patience. And actually, when you learn patience, you actually discern what is most important. Does it really matter? Does it really matter? Mm-hmm. So I literally, when I was kind of sort of thinking about like what would be my my top 10, they're really ones that I would want to apply, you know, to myself. And some of these things I've had to apply to myself since 2019, where I've been. I left the UK, I left my home, my family, a long-term marriage, and fled to France and lived literally up a goat track until literally last summer. So I've lived alone as a hermit. And so some of these are virtues I really have had to embrace out of necessity of, I guess, my own transformation. Okay. And that has been a spiritual path, but very much a practical manifesting the spiritual in the everyday reality. You know, I don't live sort of somewhere up there. It's about, well, how do I apply that in my day-to-day life? So of the virtues that I have literally listed, they might change, but they're the ones that I'm working with at the moment with the book and I'm drafting out. They are patience, faith, trust, compassion, kindness, integrity, discernment, courage, diligence, and discipline. And as I've gone through each of them, I've reflected on my own life in terms of how I've applied those, how I've seen other people apply them, probably those people who were my own wise elders, and literally how we can galvanize them now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been the kind of the process. I work in the kind of work I do. I work with what I call cohesive communities. How do we bring communities together so that they are solid as they were in past times? That was what I grew up in rural Somerset. I grew up in what I call a cohesive community. And the glue, there were many rituals around that, but it was also the women that held the communities together. So with what I call the rise of the divine feminine, that energy, I'm sensing a kind of a rebirth of those skills that are going to be needed that certainly have been kept going in Indigenous communities too, which I've also been spending time in. So that's the rationale for the book. I hope once it is a kind of a physical thing that people can read, that actually the next step would be to actually turn it into a teaching manual or running workshops. I will eventually be having a base back in the UK, and I'm sensing that that's what I'll be doing, you know, with that UK base, is to literally be teaching this so that it's visceral, so that people feel it.
Absolutely.
Because it does need to be something that's embodied. You know, what when I say courage, you know, what does that mean? Well, it's a feeling you have in your body. You know when you're doing something that's taking you. It's not that you don't have fear, but that you're actually going through the fear and you're not letting the fear take over you. So it comes from that sort of the sacred, the solar plexus, you know, here, courage, rage of the heart. And it's a feeling of, I say, the fear and transmuting it into the fire energy to move you forward into action. So a lot of these virtues are virtues also of where you can take the action and where you can also challenge yourself. Discipline. A lot of this is going to require discipline. The day-on-day things that we do every day to embed our learning or our practice. This is a time of great mastery for us all.
Absolutely.
Whatever, wherever you're at. That's what I say. It's like, as a humanity, we're being challenged, and it's really to encourage us to up the level of mastery, you know, what we can do, not what we can't do.
Absolutely. And we have to sort of get used to living with the unknown instead of having this security that, and it's a delusional security because, you know, we never know what the future will hold, you know, and being comfortable with the uncomfortable. I know you spoke about courage, and I did a singing sort of songwriting workshop yesterday, and I had to sing my song and play guitar, and I've only been playing a very short time, but you know, it's like having that courage and determination to just do it anyway. And you know, you feel so much better for doing it. You feel the courage inside you. You know, I mean, that's just a small example, but yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, the uncertainty, it's a big thing. We are living in uncertain times. So what are the tools? And I agree with you, Alice. When I was living in France, you know, when I first went there, my French was okay, but I never thought that it would be good enough, or I would feel comfortable or courageous enough to actually run workshops in French. If somebody had said to me when I first went there, that's what I would do, I would not believe them. But actually pushing through that sort of then that deep belief in faith of that's what I was called to do, actually you can go through so many barriers of your own self-limitations. So I think having had those experiences myself of, you know, just pushing through, and I think being rooted in something, what are you rooted in? And I'm very rooted, I guess, in my faith. You know, I've always had a sort of a deep knowing, and wherever that deep knowing has taken me, it's like I do honestly believe I'm there for a reason. You know, it's no such thing as a coincidence. And I think that more and more of us are stepping into that place of actually just step in. You know, it's not about what other people think, or, you know, the shame or the guilt, all of those other emotions that actually we're having to let go of in these times. Mm. And that's also about being fearless and courageous. It's not that we don't have some of those things that are within us, but actually we don't let it stop us or curtail us. We are being called to step up.
Absolutely, yeah. So what would you like to share about in a bit more detail, some tools that maybe people can take away and you know, try for themselves?
Yeah. I think the one that I've written about quite a lot is around trust. Okay. I wrote an article not long ago about the difference between trust and transaction. Okay, in our Western world, in our modern Western world, we are transacting all the time, particularly, you know, it's like a marketplace. You know, do something for me, I give you money. Money is the kind of the currency of exchange, and that's a transaction. But in communities where you trust one another, so in communities that, you know, Indigenous communities, or certainly the community I grew up in, it wasn't that people had much money, but there was a constant system of a gift economy and exchange, you know, exchanging vegetables from the garden, honey, you know, whatever it was, nobody went without, because there was a trust within the community that you were all there to look after one another. Okay. And I think we need to get more comfortable with trust, because we've become very mistrustful. Anything to do with the other, you know, it's like, it's kind of grown out of all proportion. I mean, I use kind of sort of some of my own personal anecdotes. And I remember it could have been maybe 10 years ago. I was on the tube in London with my adult daughter. And I always would talk to people on the tube. You know, I lived and worked in London. So you'd talk to people on the tube. And for me, it would always be around probably a book that I've been reading. So I said to the woman next to me, she was reading a book I just finished, you know, what do you think of that book? And when we got off the tube, my daughter said, did you know that woman? I said, no. She said, well, why did you speak to her? And I said, well, because she was reading a book that I'd read. And it was just like, this was verboten. And I've seen it get worse and worse. And we have to stop this. We have to stop being in the fear of, I don't trust that person because, and I can only transact with you through money. Because whether we like it or not, one of the things that's going to hit us is, I talked about changes, is going to be changes in our economic system. There might be periods we can't get money at the bank. We don't have money that we can transact with, whether it's actual currency or it's digital. You know, we might have to transact or exchange in different ways, whether it's seeds, foods, you know. And I was living this way in my life in France, in a rural community. So, but there has to be people who model it. You know, you can't just say that's a good idea and you don't do it. Mm-hmm. You have to do it, and also you have to sort of feel it. What does it feel like when you really trust somebody? And actually, you know, respond to that. So with all of the kind of the different virtues, I'm working with them in terms of them, me being able to give sort of anecdotal case studies. You know, I've also gone back to some wise texts, because I do like sort of esoteric quotes from, you know, times past, whether it's my grandmother's quote or, you know, Rumi, it doesn't matter. But, you know, we are just reconnecting with some basic human truths that we need now. Mm. We need now. You know, we've gone through this before as a humanity. you know, when times have been very difficult, you know, well, what happened then, you know, and it calls for that character. We have to be the sort of the, we have to have good character. And again, that's become a little bit kind of unfashionable in these politically correct days. And I'm quite happy to, you know, to resurrect that, because it certainly stood me in very good stead throughout the whole of my life. And even more so now in these times of great change. I mean, I've moved countries, I've moved languages, you know, I've had to literally let so much go in faith, and to not fear what I don't know, and to trust that somewhere along that path, it will be the right path.
Yeah. I mean, trust is something you have to work on your own, don't you? You have to, you know, trust is almost like also finding your own truth and really, you know, working on that, because I know, you know, a lot of people don't actually trust people, don't trust very few people. And, you know, when your trust has been broken in your relationships and in your families, you know, you really do lose that. And it's really something you have to work on, like you said about discernment. And, you know, you really have to work on that, because it has to be rebuilt.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I write a lot about how, you know, we are moving from an inversion of, we've been working so much in the head. You know, the head has been the kind of sort of, you know, our primary navigational tool, but we're moving much more into navigating with the heart and with the gut, you know, which is literally what we did historically. And so when we go more into the gut and the heart, you know, we feel things, that's then a kind of sort of a tool for discernment around trust. One of the things I noticed in France post-COVID, when I ran sacred meditations in our local church, I called them sacred meditations to really kind of sort of give it language that people could understand. But actually what I was doing was building resilience. And the resilience was around encouraging people to trust within this small group of about eight. And we would do that through touch on our own hearts, but touch on the hearts of others. We then did a lot of eye contact and also singing to one another. And those might sound like they are very primal things, but in our modern world, we don't do them. And it was interesting to see over the period, a sort of 3 to 6 month period, how people built trust through simple methods of touch. Yeah, touch, feel, and eye contact and the voice. And then we would have a big basket in the center of the circle every week, and people would come and put in that basket whatever their troubles were that week. So they learnt to trust the group to, if you like, name all of our troubles and to literally let them go. And that simple, that 6 months of doing that taught me a lot about how far away we've come from that very basic trust. So I know that there's a lot of work to do. This isn't going to happen overnight, but the more that we come together in small groups and communities to build that is going to give us the cohesion that we need in whatever our community is to withstand these big storms that we're in now, but there's going to be more of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you say about trust, when you know, Western society, we don't feel so much, you know, we talk about it, but you don't feel so much of the heart and express how we feel. So we're storing all that energy in our body, which is obviously causing disease. And like you say about singing and voicing, you know, it's a very powerful tool, and it's a very healing tool that we have with ourselves all the time, you know, whether it's like singing in the shower or just expressing ourselves, or, you know, making sounds or whatever, or banging a drum and really expressing ourselves. And then we're getting in touch with our emotion. You know, we're actually opening that door to feel more and to express and to share and feel supported by other people that we've got, you know, like you say, with the group, you know, they've got to know each other by this regular contact. And it's like you say, small steps that then build this. It's not something you can just, you know, create in a day. It's a process that takes time.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that I noticed, particularly when I was living in France during COVID, I had, you know, all sorts of people kind of come and have sessions with me for all sorts of reasons. And, you know, when you're not using your maternal language, okay, and you only have sort of very little of the language, actually what you do quite naturally is that you go into your other senses, so whether that's the heart or the gut. And I was working with a fellow for quite some time. And what interested me is that he really didn't even know how to name an emotion. You know, so even as we know that anger, let's just take the emotion of anger. You know, anger can have many faces and it can sit in many parts of the body and it can be hiding underneath all sorts of things. So when we can actually start to name the emotion, name where we're feeling it in our body, which will align with, you know, different parts, different chakras which are blocked. And then if you continue that work, it's what was the seed of that? Where did that start? You know, and we know it's always kind of sort of, you know, childhood through to kind of sort of adolescence. And so if you can map it onto sort of the developmental, you know, part of us, then you can really start to work with that as a kind of sort of healing the wound.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the work that I've been doing. And I think that's probably why this book has kind of sort of come out of that. So that probably underneath the tools, there are many other tools in terms of the actual emotions.
Yeah.
You know, because emotions, I mean, that's a whole big kind of sort of topic. But I'm with you. I'm very much into the path of around frequency medicine, vibration, sound, and sound healing. Mm-hmm. And I've always done a lot of work in my coaching days with women. Okay. And what I discovered, you know, donkeys years ago, is that very competent women were very blocked in their throat chakra. And, you know, this is an ongoing thing. So as we unblock that throat chakra so that people can literally sing their truth, to speak their truth, to be their truth in a whole embodied way, that's hugely healing. And then they can take their place in the cohesive community. Mm-hmm. So I just see this as a kind of sort of, it's a process, it's a journey, and people will kind of sort of come on the journey as things, you know, move. And I'm a great believer that, you know, when you're working in a field that is kind of sort of very current, then it will attract more people, you know, to it. So mm-hmm. I think part of, you know, me doing some more sort of teaching, I mean, that's part of my background as well. But I feel that this needs to be kind of sort of passed out and given to as many other kind of, sort of people who want to take it up for their own development, but also then for them to use it to work with groups that they're involved with.
Yeah, sounds great. That's what we need, definitely. I mean,
yeah.
Feelings, you know, if we're not expressing them, we're storing them. And, you know, and there's a lot of unhappy people because they're not seen and heard. And you know, they go through a trauma or they go through an experience and it's not fully processed because they don't feel the feelings. They don't release the feelings. So they keep on carrying it on. And, you know, it's like a repetition in your life. If you don't come to heal the wounds, then you know the wounds get bigger and more explosive. And and obviously I'm sure since 2020 a lot has changed and there's been a lot of alienation and, like you say, lack of touch, lack of connection. And, you know, we're more and more behind this social media and we're not getting into real contact with people and really connecting on a deeper level and also connecting with ourselves, which is, you know, we have to connect with ourselves, you know, to connect with others, you know, on a deeper level.
Well, you asked me at the beginning of this podcast about my social media, and I said to you, I don't do social media. It's very interesting because I never felt comfortable with it. And that's interesting because I ran a coaching company online, but with coach supported learning, and it didn't sit comfortably with me. Because I very much like to be in somebody's personal energy field. I mean, obviously, like everybody, I've had to use technology, but I came off LinkedIn. I never did Facebook. And so during COVID, you know, I went back to what I know to be, you know, the truth of my being, literally my being in my community, my physical presence. And I feel that more and more. And, you know, when people have needed to get hold of me, they can find ways to get hold of me. It's been very, very interesting. I'm asked constantly, have I got this Instagram? Have I got that? You know, it hasn't stopped me doing podcasts. You know, it hasn't stopped me doing all sorts of things. You know, I've kind of, if you like, worked underground and it's been word of mouth. but that's been my most comfortable place because I'm in the physical presence of others. And we need to go back to that more and more. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, we need to get rid of all of the sort of the social media, but I know that people spend a lot of time on it and not necessarily out with doing the kind of the physical touch. And just what have we done to kind of sort of children who don't have that interaction? Their whole kind of sort of, you know, neuronal connections is not developing in the ways that a holistic human being should in order to have those natural sort of human responses. But, you know, we are where we are. All we can do is be aware of where we are and say, well, actually, where do we want to go from here? Where do we want to go from here? And I, for one, want us to be a more interactive, you know, human. I want to be a fully functioning human, not a kind of sort of part of being a machine human. That's my feeling for myself. And I'm sure there are a lot of other people who believe that too. So I think that we just need to connect in the best ways that we can to say who we are and what kind of world we want to build for, you know, our grandchildren, our great grandchildren.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree. And so what other tools would you like to share from your list?
I think the other one that is around, well, kindness and compassion. You know, I think that we are already seeing very difficult things, you know, where human beings are suffering a lot. We will see more. And so I think we have to find that compassion within ourselves. When things get rough, you know, it's compassion for ourselves, but also sometimes it's seeing other people do not such nice things. And to maintain, you know, sometimes a bigger understanding of forgive them, Lord, they know not what they do. People don't always act out of just pure badness or evil. Very often that they act because of their own wounds. And so I think having the compassion in those times, which requires wisdom and a great deal of patience, is much needed. You know, it's work in progress. Mm-hmm. You know, when I go through this list, you know, for myself, I say, okay, so what work have I still got to do? And, you know, a lot. I'm not writing this from a position of saying, you know, I've got this nailed. Absolutely not. I'm constantly challenged in terms of my own prejudices, you know, my own wounding, my own triggers, you know. And I think when we can come together in circle and actually articulate this, you know, again, we're sharing that we're vulnerable too. We're vulnerable too.
Yeah. Vulnerability is very important to share because that's when we can be our authentic selves. Because otherwise, the society that we're living in is not allowing us to be authentic. It's all kind of fake. So, how can people contact you? Because obviously, I know it's all word of mouth. People can contact me and I can get them in touch with you. But we'll also put your email address.
The email address will be perfect at the moment. As I say, I'm living in Portugal at the moment, seeding myself to have a hub here, and there will eventually be a kind of sort of a website, but I haven't felt that that's been the priority. I have felt that, you know, my deep inner work and living like a hermit and slowly coming back out into the world, to be in the world but not of the world, has been the priority. So I think just for me, you were talking about, you know, fear and courage. I am by nature a very private person. So the idea of having my own website, is like kind of, it feels very exposing. But I know that that's part of, the creating of the communities, you know, not just actually, which is a lot of what I do, you know, but more those kind of, sort of wise, you know, wider communities, you know, which the internet kind of, sort of requires. So I think it's just been a process for me too. But yes, you can put the email if anybody wants to contact me.
And maybe you can write a little sort of bio about what you're talking about, so then people can read that and see if it connects with them and can get in touch with you and any other sort of support work that you do
Yes, and their support work that I'm doing. Yeah. And also I am within already a network of other people doing their own unique, authentic, you know, support work in these times. And my what I'm imagining is that when I've got my hub back in the UK, that hub will have many other kind of sort of therapists that will be in circle with me to offer the kind of support that people will need. Because I feel that it's not going to necessarily just be one therapist that people will need. All the therapists together need to come together to share, because this is big work. And it's also about empowering people in communities to be helping one another. You know, this isn't about people becoming dependent for too long. It's about encouraging their own growth around their own self-healing. I'm a great believer in that we all have that ability and power.
Brilliant. Okay, thank you so much for sharing, and I'm sure we'll speak again. And good luck with your new life in Portugal and creating community there. And thank you so much for coming on today and talking to me. And I hope we connect again soon. Thank you for listening today, and I hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like any further information about my work, you can contact me at travelwithalice.com.